Session number 20601, Reel 2.
Nobby Newell, Reel 2.
Well, as I say, it was very, very muddy, and the real answer for being up there, we were to do boat drill. The main of the vessels we used were American LCPLs, which were well crewed by our states. They had a ramp at the front which wound up with a handle and a ratchet pull which you could hear 5 miles away. But it was run by the RASC Maritime Regiment, and they would not give us wet landings if they could help it. Meanwhile, our officers always used to say, "Give them a wet landing." Always. I don't know why. I don't know what the joy of it was, I'm sure. But we went along with that. We did sort of exercises, and we would land and go inland a little bit, do some sort of an exercise, look, probably form a defensive area, come back into the boats again, and disembark. Away we'd go, and go around the lock, and then come back and do another landing. Well, that went on every day, and on Sunday it was make amend, which is make your bed and mend your back, if you don't know. And we would have that day to rest and take a blow. But then they came up with the order. They said all those who have never done boat training before, which was all us younger ones, will do extra boat work on Sunday to make up for it. Well, we did that every Sunday we were there, and we must have been there 4 or 5 weeks. And I remember one particular Sunday we had an officer who was a Campbell by name. Cameron by name. He was an ex-school teacher. He got a little bit of a hump on his back, and he had to take us out that particular day in this landing craft. And on that day, I think we did 41 landings, and the last landing was in the dark. I mean, it wouldn't be very late up there at that time of year, but it was in the dark, and we had all this business, and we landed on this beach, and there are huge boulders all over the place, so the landing craft doesn't get all that close in. And he had an MOA, that's a Marine Officer's Attendant, who would have to be with him. He had this by the name of Mick O'Brien. And Mick O'Brien had had enough. He was fed up. He was an old soldier. He didn't want to know. And we landed that the last one. And when we took up our defensive position round the beach, and the sergeant came in and checked on us and all this rigmarole. And then he said, "Anyone seen Lieutenant Cameron?" Nobody had seen him. Well, he arrived about 20 minutes later, absolutely wet through. He lost his steel helmet. His torch wouldn't work because it was wet through and shorted out. He produced his map, which all the ink had run on the map. And he said, "Well, all right, we'll go back by boat." So we went back by boat, and that was probably one of the final exercises up there.
What had happened exactly?
Well, he came off the ramp. And it's all big rocks down below, and very easy to go over. And he said, "Well, I tripped," he said, "and someone stood on my back," and we all knew who it was. he was a crude bloke. Anyhow, he said, "If I find the man who stood on my back," well, we knew he was never going to find him. And nobody would split because we were fed up with him. Anyhow,
who was a crude bloke?
His MOA.
This was Mick O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah. Always a crude, I'll tell you.
When you said he had a little bit of a hump on his back.
Well, he was slightly round-shouldered, you know, just slightly, not much.
When you said make and mend, you said make your beds and mend your what?
Mend your back. Have a blow, in other words, have a rest.
Have a blow means have a rest.
Yeah, yeah. If you ever go up to Inverary, if you look from the castle, get back a bit, you can see over the tops of the trees, and way up on the top of one of the hills there's a, which looks to be a little sort of, well, I suppose it's a would it be a little tiny chapel or something like that? Well, one day they said we'll have a run today, and we went up the hillside, which was very, very steep, rained this thing, and back home again. And then they said falling again at 2 o'clock. Well, most of them had had enough by then, but that's neither here nor there, is it?
What else happened at Inverary?
Well, nothing really. I don't think we did much else but just this eternal boat work. When we left there, we went down to where? We went down to Hursley Camp near Winchester. Now, that was a new Hutman's camp. The rumour was the Americans wouldn't go in it because there was no flush toilets. They were nice huts. The toilets were in the usual rows, and there were buckets underneath each toilet seat, and that went away, and it was carted away by a tractor and a truck, and down into the valley below, and it was burnt on an incinerator. It was all burnt away, look. So it was dead, but they wouldn't come in there because of that, but we thought it was a very fine camp. While we were there, we did more field training. We did one particular lot of field firing in a little spinny, which involved a sort of an attack on it, an assault course with it. Finish up firing 10 rounds into a target. And Joe O'Neill, who was one of our blokes, who was a nice lad, came from London. He was one. He was never quite with it, and he was absolutely, well, he was almost eight on his feet. And I remember firing his 10 rounds for him, which completed the section's shoot. And Joe nearly disappeared. I don't know where he went. But after the war, I went in the cafe in Wickham to have a cup of tea. And the bloke jumped down out of a tanker, and he was the co-driver of a tanker, came down from London. And we spoke to each other, look, we'd only met last week, but we've never seen him ever since. But very few of the people I knew then do I meet now, because they're all up north and way, and, you know, they used to say to me, where do you come from? I used to say, Ho Wickham. Where the hell is that? And I used to tell them, he said, well, you're a Londoner. That was as close as they could get.
And you were still in 5th Battalion?
Still in the 5th Battalion. Well, we went to Hursley, and we did all this training there. We had another course in the river there under the bridges, where we used to trot through there, and oh dear, full of smoke and God knows what. But that was another one, and we had one particular business there where the bugle sounded about 3 o'clock in the morning, falling. People said, what the hell is going on here? This bloke looked at his watch. What the hell is going on here? So we said, oh, a great bloke, forget it. And yeah, they very soon came in and fetched us eight. And they said, fall in fighting order, which is your small pack. So we fell in fighting order. Like half the blokes didn't fill the water bottle up. Half of them had got no shoes, no socks on, just got the boots on. Thought they were only going out for a quick, doing them back in again. Some had got no shirts, but they all got the battle dress on. Anyhow, when we finally got there, they mustered each company, and then the order was right turn, quick march. Well, those who got no socks on, they were very soon in trouble with blisters and one another. Well, we marched all day, round in a great circle, and came in the top of the camp, which was another Marine battalion up there. We think it was the 3rd Battalion. And we came by there, and we thought we were coming down in this easy entrance down through their camp into ours. But we went round the block, and Sergeant Kate, who's on that photograph up there, I was having a moan and a drip, as they call it in the Navy and the Marines. And he come up against me, and I think he was almost finished as well, and he laid the law down to me, and he said, one more and you're on a charge. And I've reminded that man of it several times since. But that was that. Well, then we had a we had a battalion rifle shoot, and it was one company against another. And Cameron said, if my platoon gets a possible, I will buy a barrel of beer. Well, we got a possible because I was the man who did it. And they said, cool, we're all right here. Well, he never bought the beer. We never had the beer. And that was held against him until he disappeared. But that was another thing. Well, that year I became battalion shot. And I did very well. I always liked shooting. It was no problem at all to me. Well, we went on a war weapons week there. We marched into Winchester. And it rained all the way there and all the way back. And we went by the saluting base. And the mayor was stood under a bit of an awning. And he doffed his tricorn hat like that. And we went round in a circle and came back and disappeared home. And they had good words for him, I'll tell you. Everybody was wet through. Well, from there we went over to Hailin Island, where we never should have gone because there was no facilities. We marched around the island a couple of times. There were no facilities to do anything there. We did a little bit of training on boats which were Eurekas, which are the ones they landed a lot of the troops at Dieppe with. We did a fair bit with that on a couple of days, but we had one session where we piloted the boats and drove the boats, and the Matlows had our gear on and landed, and they enjoyed every minute of it. We strapped all their web gear on and gave them a rifle and had a good laugh at them. But it was all in good humour, you know. Anyhow, we weren't there very long, about six or seven weeks. And then we went back to Burley, which is in Hampshire. And we went under canvas there. And it was very, very hot. It was midsummer, very, very hot. And we did various bits and pieces. And then one day they said, well, this unit is now going to become the fifth 45 Commando from the 5th Battalion. And they said, well, we need you to volunteer. Well, there was a lot of chatter for a start. A lot of the older ones said, well, I'm having none of that. They couldn't force you. But anyway, most of us, we got together, we had a chat about it and said, well, we'll volunteer. So we volunteered. Now, the army commandos were all volunteers, and they always said that all the Marines were pressed men, and that is not so. And I mean, a lot more of my thing would tell you exactly the same thing. Anyhow, I think according to the date, it was August, early August, that we actually became 4th Commando. But we were doing it before that. I mean, I know we had a run down with Lieutenant Jackson, who was my section officer. We had a run with him down to Highcliffe and had a swim in the sea, and that was boiling hot. And we were, well, I won't say we weren't fit, because we weren't fit as we finished up, but it was a fair traumatic journey, because it was so hot and we had no walks amongst us, all running. And I've spoken to him since about it, and I told him he doesn't know how close he come to getting a rifle wrapped round his neck. Because he kept pushing us, so I think he'd got his orders, obviously. Anyhow, we then became 4th Commando. We moved from there to Hillsea Barracks, which is at Cosham, near Portsmouth. And we were sort of getting extended training, really, doing things we'd never done before. And one of the things we did, there was a bit of a flap on about the oil storage tanks. The back of Portsmouth there, which was now what was he? I suppose he's the commander of Portsmouth area, the admiral. There were some big oil tanks in the grounds of his house, and they thought that the Germans were going to raid it and destroy the unit, you know. Anyway, we used to go up there every third night, sleep in the roof, do patrols half the night and guard it, and come back in the early hours and run all the way back down Ports, down Hill, into Hillsea. Well, that lasted for several weeks. We also march down into Eastney Barracks and have a swim in the pool there occasionally. And then myself and Freddie Bartholomew, we went on a stag shooting course up in Scotland at a place called Corpac, which is going west from Fort William. We arrived there with several more from the commando, who I didn't know at the time. We arrived there one evening, and the old gilly there, he said, "Well, you boys you better have a trial and see if you can shoot." You know, well, we stuck a bit of cardboard up and at about 70 or 80 yards and had a few shots at it. And he says, "Oh, we'll have some staggies." Well, when we got out there and the excitement of the hunt was on, that was a different kettle of fish altogether. But we did after several days. I mean, for a few days, we went over the hills for miles and miles and miles and never saw a thing. But then finally, we had a session where they got round them, and we shot 32 that day. The idea was there were too many stags getting about, and they went to a canning factory in Edinburgh. Anyhow, we completed that course. Freddie Bartholomew wasn't with us. He went off with, no, what was his name? Was his, I can't think. He went off with a lord, and he was sort of more or less his sort of runner and one thing or another while they were shooting, you know. But we sort of took a day off now and again to help cook the food. There was a roadblock there with the Cameron Highlanders were manning. A roadblock along the side of the lock, and we stayed in this shooting lodge with them. Oh, we've been there since the shooting lodge is an outward bound place now. And I mean, I enjoyed that. It was good, but it was darn hard work. We had the Mark IV with a telescopic sight. After the first day, the sight was absolutely useless. It was fogged up inside, and we finished up using open sights, which we had good results with just the same. Whether they ever did anything about the sights after that, I don't know. I think the modern ones have a chemical inside which keeps them dry inside. We left there and we came back to Ayr. Meanwhile, the 4-5 had moved up to Ayr, and we had civvy billets there. Well, we arrived there and the people we were billeted with, myself, Arthur Lee and Tommy Unthank, we were in one billet. Freddie Bartholomew and Corporal Porter were upstairs, and we had a good do there, but we did a lot of running marches and one thing and another, and in other words, we were getting really fit. And we got back there. We were there about 3 or 4 days, and I and one or two more went down on another sniper's course down to Braidane Small Arms School, that's near Leon Solent. And we did a course there, and what I hadn't told you before, I'd been on, I think, two of these at Pennelly in South Wales. And Lieutenant Colonel Armstrong was a Canadian from the First World War, who was a great sniping man in his day. He was the OC of this small unit. And we did a lot of shooting there, you know, really accurate stuff. And, we did the course. It was only about a week and came back again. And we then carried on training again. And eventually went to Achnacarry, to the Commando Training Centre, I would think early in November, 43. Well, we went through the course, which was pretty hard. We were six to a tent. They were bell tents. We were six to a tent with six blankets each. The toilet was a couple of hundred yards away. Was a vast hole dug in the ground with a pole across the top of it. Still got the bark on it. And there was no way you would spend a long time doing your devotions up there. It was so damn cold. And the urinal was just a few sheets of tin. That was that. Well, we did a course up there, which included lots of running marches along the top of the lock. it was 3.5 miles out and 3.5 miles back in. And I think I'm right, and whether you can ever check this or not, I wouldn't know, but we were supposed to hold the record of 53 minutes for the 7 miles, which means one walk only on the way back uphill. I can't think of the name of our instructor there. Very nice man. I met him on D-Day, actually. He was a company sergeant major, but then he was promoted to an officer, a lieutenant. Anyhow, we did the course, and we left there just before Christmas. And the band of the Camerons played us out of the camp. We marched out in full marching order to Speen Bridge, where the nearest train station was. And they played Life on the Ocean Wade, which is their regimental march. And they played just the bare bones of it, and that went over and over and over again. And every time they played, they got faster and faster and faster. And we were C Troop, which was the third in row. And by the time we got out the gate, we were almost running. And when we got along the lot, there was a piper stood on a rock, and he played us until we could hear him no more. And from there we went down to Eastbourne. Into civvy billets again. I was billeted with another corporal, Ronnie Stewart, who later got the military medal. I was billeted with him in an old lady's house, Dorothy Austin Lee, who was a descendant of Jane Austen, and we lived at 2 Milton Crescent, Eastbourne. No, I've made a mess of that.
Why is that?
Well, we didn't go to Eastbourne straight away. We went back to Ayr. We went back to Ayr, and from there we went back up in the new. We had leave, Christmas leave. We went back up to Ackharracle on Loch Sonart, and we did further boat training up there for several weeks, and that was the most inhospitable place you've ever been to. Nissenuts. Wet through day in and day out, wet landings as well, which didn't help things. All culminating with an exercise, an opposed landing, they called it, where there was mortars and all firing over the top. And it was pretty near the rear thing. The sea was very, very rough. We were on the landing ship Prince Bedwin, which had LCAs on, and we got aboard, and which was a devil of a job because the sea was so rough. But we did get aboard them, and we got to the beach, did our exercise, which lasted quite a few hours, and came back to pick the craft up. When we got back, they put to sea again and come back, but when we got there, all broadside on to the beach. In other words, the sea was so rough that the engines wouldn't hold them. And the drill there was that we all got rain, and we spun them rain in the sea and pushed them out until we could push no more, and then the engines took over. And then we all got back aboard, and by the time we got back to the landing craft, which was out in the sea quite a way, it was pitch black at the time, and they had a new thing there, which the fella had a thing, looked like a pair of binoculars. And with that, there was a signal sent from the ship, which was picked up. So you knew exactly where they were and where to go, because you couldn't see nothing. And we got back there. By then, the thing was three parts full of water. And we'd been bailing with our helmets and one thing and another. Oh, dear. Anyhow, we got back from there. And we then went on the Prince Bedwin. We went down, and we were supposed to be going to Southampton.
What was this place where you were doing the landing craft training in Scotland?
The what?
What was the name of the place?
Well, this last one.
Yes.
It was Ackharracle, and it's on Loch Sonart.
Loch Sonart?
Sonart.
Sonart?
Yeah. There's nothing there. There was nothing there. Oh, we've been up there since, but we still can't find the place. It's all fir trees and one thing and another. You just don't recognise it anymore. Anyhow, we then left there, Went out to sea and went down through St George's Channel, and it was very, very, very rough. There's no doubt about that. I had a job there. I was made one of the bridge messengers, being a corporal. And there were three or four of us. We did it in shifts. And the idea is, you went up on the bridge, and if the officer, you know, the officer commanding, if he wanted anything or an errand run, that was what you were there for. Well, I don't remember ever doing anything for him, but you had to be there just the same. And we came down through St George's Channel, and it got rougher and rougher and rougher. And we got round as far as Milford Haven. And the idea was, they said it was too rough to continue. We would go in there for shelter. Well, they wouldn't let us in there for some unknown reason. Anyhow, we set sail again. We went back up the coast again into St George's Channel, heading for Liverpool. Well, I remember so clearly the lieutenant commander in charge of the ship. He was there with his Jimmy, the one, his second in command. And he said, which didn't help me at all, on the bulkhead there was a hand painted in red, and there was a black, like a clock face, a black thing either way to a certain degree of list, and above that was in red. Well, I stood there as a young lad, and I thought, well, God, what's that doing on red all the time? And the conversation went something like, well, we'll have to turn to port. We'll have to go straight out. If we turn any more to starboard, she'll be over. And that went on for hours on hours. And I've always made a bit of a joke of it. We said, oh, we thought we were going to America. But we then got out so far, and then they said, well, Nate, hold on, we've got to turn somewhere because there's a minefield straight in front. Anyway, we did a lot of, I don't know what we did, but you could look out at the sea straight outside, you know, you were at such an angle. And of course, had the landing craft rained on the boat deck. There were 12 of those, which made it so heavy, top heavy. I mean, many of these boats were sort of cruise ships before the war, mainly Belgian. And anyhow, finally we did get rained. All the fresh water was contaminated with oil. There had been several people injured. One of them was a Captain Sammons. He broke his leg there. And there again, I got very friendly with a chap in the carpenter shop on the stern end of the ship. And we had quite a good time in there. And he used to make us a cup of tea and one thing or another. Very nice bloke. But while we're talking of the Navy, I'm very grateful to the Navy, because whenever we were wet through and absolutely whacked and that, they would always take your clothes, find you something to wear, take your clothes, take them down the engine room, dry them off and bring them back to you. And always very, very thankful for that. I mean, I never knew any of them really. I did come off watch one day on the trip, and I went out on the boat deck for air, because the air on these things is all oily taste, and that does more to upset people's stomachs than anything I've ever come across. And I came out on the boat deck for a breath of air, and it was very, very wild and rough. And I saw a pair of boot heels between the landing craft and the stanchion that they sort of used to the derrick to get it outboard. And there was a pair of heels there, and I got all this pair of heels and pulled him back. And there was a young sailor. He was absolutely unconscious and absolutely saturated. And I dragged him in, and I got him on my shoulder, carried him down the ladder into the sailor's mess deck. And I said, well, look, I don't know who he is, but perhaps you can help him. Well, they took over from there. Now, I don't know if he survived. I suppose he did. But he was very, very close to going over the side. Another roll or two, and I reckon he'd have been gone. Anyhow, we finally managed to turn round somehow or other. Whether the storm abated a bit, I don't really remember. But we got back, and we went into Liverpool. I think we probably went up to Glasgow, because we finished up in Glasgow Lime Street Station.
Oh, Lime Street Station, yeah. Is Liverpool.
Oh, well, then it must have been Liverpool. But anyhow, they said, Rudo, you've got 4 hours, you can go ashore, as we call it, and sort of unwind a bit. Well, of course, a lot of the blokes got drunk. and we marched from the docks to Lime Street.